Everybody, and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is KYMN out of Northfield, Minnesota, the home of Cows, Colleges, and a beautiful weekend, huh? Did you go out in the backyard and say, oh, that's where that ball is. That's where I left the rake. Oh, my goodness, there's a bunch of toys. Finally, the snow melting and rediscovering your yard. A beautiful day today. Yesterday was also a beautiful day. Hope you enjoyed it. We certainly did. My wife and I went driving countryside and saw a lot of motorcycles out there. And unfortunately, one of the motorcyclists was killed. And that was right off of Highway 52 at Highway 50. You know where that is. And a young lady pulled out and the guy broadsided her. And he was in the right of way and it killed him. So be careful on those motorcycles, will you please? Another thing that's exciting is that there are a lot of pilots in the Kim Listening area, and they would have an opportunity to get out and fly yesterday. And I have one of those pilots in studio for, I believe, the third time, Dave Bates. Hi, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing great, thank you.
Wow, what a lifetime you've had. I think you were here two times before, correct?
At least two, maybe even three.
Really, that many? Holy cow. But you've had a very interesting life, and I think we left off that you worked at Northwest Orient Airlines, if that's
right.
Correct.
Yep.
And your name is Dave Bates.
Yep.
And you live off the Kelly Dudley Lake.
Right.
And you have three children. Or no,
you three,
Barbara, Mike, and Steve.
Those are
your siblings,
right? And then my children are David, John, and Annie.
Okay, and so you're a family man and a busy man. Your wife leaves you every once in a while and lives in Rochester, where she's a neurosurgeon or something like that.
A neurologist, yes.
A neurologist. All right. Sounds like a religion. What are you? I'm a neurologist. Anyhow, you're really, really into flying, and you keep your plane at the Faribault Airport.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And do you motorcycle?
Oh, yes. I've got a 09 Fatboy Harley.
Okay.
And so I ride around on that. I like anything that's open air.
Yeah.
I enjoy that. Yes.
Okay, a Fatboy.
Yep.
Good for you. And you also, let's go back to Northwest Orient Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a very responsible job there. You were in charge of ground workers?
Yes, it'd be all the ground equipment. And at MSP, which was the hub for Northwest Airlines, it was all the everything that I always told people, everything that moves at that airport for Northwest Airlines that's not an airplane. So everything from pickup trucks, food trucks, baggage trailers,
forklifts,
and then the jet bridges you walk out on to get to your airplane.
Yep.
One thing that people forget is that Northwest Airlines handled the complete baggage system for all the airlines, but basically down in underneath the main terminal.
What other airlines were there when you were working at Northwest?
Oh, we had American, Southwest, of course, Masaba at the time. Now I think they're called Endeavor. But all the majors would come and go. They always have at least one or two gates. But mainly, of course, Northwest Airlines had the majority of the gates. But we had the baggage system down below. And we would handle, on an average day, 250,000 bags.
Wow.
And the vast majority got to the people, which is amazing, at the right place, right time. So as we always said, it's a simple business, but very expensive. Just get people from point A to point B and make sure their underwear is there at the same time when they're there. And life is good then.
I had I haven't had that much of a problem with airlines when I flew, and I avoided now. But I had a missing suitcase one time when I went down to the Indy 500.
Mm-hmm.
And I complained about it, and they said, well, we'll get you your suitcase as soon as we can. Mm-hmm. And if you have to go out and buy underwear and mm-hmm. stuff like mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. Keep the receipt, and we'll handle that for you. Mm-hmm. So I took advantage of that mm-hmm. and got a pair of pants and a shirt mm-hmm. and underclothes. And about midnight, there was a guy drove in the driveway, and there was our suitcase, mm-hmm. or my suitcase.
Yep. Yep.
And I thought, wow, they even came at that time. I was surprised, yep. you know.
No, they, when I was working, I retired, it's been now 6, 7, 8 years ago. But basically, if we would take the bags and use taxi or courier to get them to the people, either their home or at the hotel where they're staying at. And we averaged, it would cost us about $150 to $200 to get those delivered. So we really worked hard on a system. We evolved into computer reading barcodes on your bag tags rather than people pushing buttons.
No.
And it's just amazing, though, the stories in what we called the bag room.
I want to hear them.
Oh, there, we'd be, example, when there was a labor concern, let's just say the ticket agents and everybody are getting ready for say potential strike, and they're mad at the company, and you know, North worst airlines, and oh my God, you know, all this fun stuff. Well, they would say take a set of golf clubs from a passenger, put them at the ticket counter, set them on that little conveyor you see behind you, but not put them in a special holding container. Well, as they went down in the first deal, all the clubs will come out and they all get jammed. And all of a sudden, when you're talking thousands of bags, we have a bag jam. Well, when that happens, all of my mechanics, basically, you know, the ground ops, in a sense, the auto shop, we all come running, the people up there, because we got to throw bags. And what you're doing is literally trying to unload the system. There could be 200-300 bags all jammed up in a tunnel. You got to get those bags out, and it's a simple problem, you know, just unplug it. But, if you ever saw some of those old commercials, Samsonite commercials, where the gorilla is throwing the bags around, pack your bags always with the thought that they may be dropped 8-10 feet, because some of these conveyors are, of course, up in the air. And your bag will be flying over top of that sometimes in the heat of battle trying to unplug, because what happens, people forget, is there's decisions made by ground operations, and they may hold flights, because if you've got 200 people and you're going to delay, say, 2-3 hours, well, their bags aren't going to be there when they get at their destination, so we're going to have to pay. Well, you take 200 times $200, you're starting to talk real money. So what they'll do many times is if we've had a bag jam, they'll say, okay, let's hold this bank, which means they'll hold a whole group of airplanes, say the 11 o'clock bank, where normally, you know, they're all taken off, and they'll ask me, when can you free it? When's it going to flush? When is it going to go through? And I'll say, I need at least 30 minutes. Well, they'll call the FAA, and they'll basically delay all those flights, or most if they can, for that time so the people get their bags. Most people, you know, a half hour, 20 minutes in a flight isn't that drastic compared to not having your suitcase, because a lot of these people, it's business travelers. They've got their presentations, you know, gifts, maybe weddings, all that stuff. Some very, you know, important items. So we'll have to hold flights. The bag system, we have machines that are called pushers. So it's a big arm. And again, pack your bags like the gorilla's going to handle it. And a little side note, my wife being an Italian neurologist, we were down in Argentina, and she had to speak down there in Mendoza. So she loves Malbec wine. So we bought some wine down there. So, of course, I'm, dear, let me pack the wine in the suitcase. I know what I'm doing. So she says, if you break any of that wine, you know, I'm going to kill you. And if you die, I'm going to still kill you. Typical Northern Italian. But we get home, and one of my mechanics comes up and goes, Batesy, yeah, I think you got a leak in your suitcase. Oh, no. Is it red or clear? Oh, you're lucky. It's the white wine. Because, oh, my God, she wanted her Malbec, you know. So I still took some pretty good heat for it. But, again, it went through the pushers. And there's such a shock when it pushes them from one conveyor belt to the next one. because it's a simple process. Just hand them your luggage at the ticket counter. And by George, that's got to go all the way through this maze and get to that airplane on, say, Flight 784 going to Boston or going overseas. And then if it's got to also go, maybe you have different airlines. You're going KLM once, say, you get to Amsterdam, and then you're going to fly Lufthansa down to Ethiopia. That was another situation where my wife was giving another presentation. She every year goes to Ethiopia, so I went a couple of years ago. And, of course, you know, I made sure, yep, we'll have all the bags, and I'm the cabana boy now, strong back, weak mind. So we had a couple extra suitcases of medical books from the mail that they give the medical school in Ethiopia because, again, it's a third world. It's a very, struggling medical school. And Paul has kind of adopted it because Ethiopia used to be an Italian colony in the day. So we get there, and, of course, we can't find our bags. Oh, my God. Well, I get on the phone. I get a hold of my old partner back at Northwest. And can you track down these bag numbers? I gave him the bag numbers because you always want to keep those tickets. Don't throw them away until you have your bags in your hand. He said, I'll see what I can do. But, you know, that went from Northwest to Delta to KLM to Ethiopian Airlines. You got four transfers, Dave. You know, it could be in Amsterdam. It could be in Milan, Okay, see what you can do. By George, the next day they found it. They gave us a call and said, it's out at the airport. Oh, okay. So we took a taxi, and we were in Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia. So we go out there, and young fellow says, yes, I have your bags. And he opens up the room, and it was about the size of a huge, arena, like a basketball place.
Wow.
And here's all these bags. And I said, well, which way? Here's the numbers. Oh, I do not know which one, but it's in here. It took us a couple hours to find them, though. But it was like looking at, if you remember the end of the movie of Raiders of the Lost Ark, when they show that warehouse with all those boxes, And that's what it looked like. My wife and I looked at each other. Okay, you start over here, we'll start over there. But that's just part of the world of the bags. Now, I got one more story, one that never made the headlines. This would have been about in 2003, I believe. For a year's time, somebody was stealing out of our baggage area, which is underneath the whole terminal, personal computers, very expensive cameras, stuff like that. And the common thought was, we had, the local police, the FBI, because interstate, they were all, we set up cameras and we just... Where are they going? And the problem was Northwest Airlines was, of course, self-insured. So if a person is missing their computer or whatever, that $1,000, we just wrote them a check. And we were self-insured. It got up to where it was over $1 million worth of, and of course, a lot of, if you lose your personal computer or something, all that information, it's just the people were incensed. And rightfully so. Well, we all figured, it's just got to be those baggage handlers. Yeah, it's got to be those guys, And for the longest time, we couldn't figure out. Then one night, I got a phone call about 3 in the morning. Hello, is this Mr. Bates? I go, yes, it is. This is FBI agent so-and-so. We request that you come immediately. Well, I'll be up in about 45 minutes. I live in Faribault, but I'm getting dressed now as you speak. He says, okay, I think we've found the culprit with the bags. I says, oh, my goodness. Okay, I'll be right up. So I jump in the car, drive up there, and, of course, went, no traffic at that time in the morning. Get into the airport, go down to the bag room. The FBI there is, oh, my God, all this stuff. And here stands one of my mechanics. Where's the fella? This is him. And I won't mention his name, of course. But anyway, I said, oh, my goodness. And I had hired him from Towsley Motor Company, Towsley Ford. Excellent, excellent mechanic. He was very quiet. He just didn't say a word. And I asked him, I says, how do you know this is it? Well, one of the baggage handlers walked by his toolbox and saw this iPad video projector combination, very expensive, they're about $5,000-$6,000, sitting on top of his toolbox. So he wrote down the serial numbers of it and everything, and then contacted us. So sure enough, that had been the previous day reported stolen. So we brought him in, and he has said he did it. So I asked him, I said, why'd you do it? And he sadly said, I just have obligations with for a lot of money, and I just it became too easy. I said, how did you do it? I mean, we had cameras everywhere. Well, he says he was one of the maintenance guys, works third shift, so there's hardly anybody there. But he would come in a little early, and he learned what types of bags held computers and cameras and all that recording, you know, stuff. He would then pick them up. Now, he wouldn't steal the whole bag. He would just take out what he wants, put it back on the bag. And underneath there, it's like a cave. You can just picture, you know, the basement of the terminal. And he would hide them in certain spots. Then all the mechanics at Northwest Airlines all had these big carry igloo-type lunch boxes, you know. And the joke was, well, you know, I'm building my 727 at home a piece at a time, like the old Johnny Cash song, you know, about his car. So that's what he did. He would just, you know, take one or two out a day. And this went on for almost a year. And it was just a sad deal. And the only mistake I probably made was at that time, I was simply, I walked him out to his car, told him he was being, you know, until further notice, you know, dismissed from his job with pay. We went through the union and all that. He didn't contest it. But what's amazing is the chief bureau director for the FBI out of Chicago was there. And he was a young guy, and he says, I'm putting in calls for the major television stations right now. I said, well, I don't, just hold on a minute. Let me get a hold of Richard Anderson through his emergency phone. So I called, and Mr. Anderson, who was the CEO at the time, just simply says, Davey, no publicity. I says, well, the FBI, you tell the FBI that I do not want to press charges. We have already paid. We will never get the money back. I explained the whole situation. He said, well, you can't get blood out of a turnip. So he says, do you realize the bad publicity we would have if this got out to the public, that you can't trust Northwest Airlines? You know, their own mechanics steal their bags. You know, I mean, it was just, and this has been many, many years ago, so it's water over the dam. But he was actually right. But, oh, my goodness, I had to hook those two up, and they must have argued back and forth for over a half hour. In fact, the FBI guy was was screaming on the phone, and Richard, I'm sure, was getting his point across pretty firm, too. So it was an interesting time, but that was during the time when WCCO, Don Shelby, was kind of going after Northwest Airlines. And that's where that term came up, you know, Northwest Airlines. And so we certainly didn't need any more bad PR. But that was, I was intimately involved in that one that evening. And anyway, it was a sad situation. The mechanic just faded away. I haven't heard anything from him. He was never charged. He brought back what he had, but he had sold about $900,000. He was selling it on eBay, but he did it through a fictitious person and another address, and, you know, it was,
you know, he had a good setup going.
He had a good setup. But amazingly, the general public never found out about that. And I think it's now that it's Delta, and they've got other systems in deal there.
My guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair is Dave Bates. And Dave's a retired guy, and he retired from Northwest Orient Airlines. And we're going to take a break here at 9:22 and remind you that the Quarterback Club is open for breakfast for another 37 minutes. They serve breakfast Monday through Saturday from 6 a.m. until 9 a.m. every single day. This is their 50th year at the QB Quarterback Club, and they invite you to stop by for lunch. And, of course, one of the favorite things is roasted chicken. They love that roasted chicken, and they prepare that for takeout or sit down, whatever you want. Locally owned, locally managed, the QB, the Quarterback Club in Northfield.
This is the sound of every home run Minnesota Twin Brian Dozier hit in 2017. It's a sound you'll hear even more in 2018, and as a season ticket holder, you'll get a lot more than that. From choosing your own games to savings on tickets, concessions, and merch, and even access to pregame field passes, you'll get the most out of the season. That is the ultimate fan experience. This is Howie Baseball. Get your season tickets today at twinsbaseball.com.
With spring here and the planting season upon us, the River Country Co-op in Randolph is here for local farmers to help in their planting season and to help provide a very successful year. Everyone at the River Country Co-op wants to congratulate our future farmers of America at the state FFA convention. We know the dedication each and every one of you has put forth in the FFA, and everyone at River Country Co-op would like to thank each and every one of you for your hard work.
Hey you, it's your stomach again. I'm here to set things straight. Subway has new signature wraps and they're packed with meat. These things make me full. Full like your voicemail after you win the lottery. Full like a clown car on the way to an oversized shoe convention. Full like the turkey, bacon, and guacamole signature wrap loaded with provolone, lettuce, tomatoes, onions, and ranch. Full like I'm gonna be after you get to Subway and eat one. You're welcome. All new Subway signature wraps. Subway, make it what you want.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on. Recognize this song?
This is from Prince.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Good for you.
Yes, yes.
And it's called When Doves Cry. And they had a big deal for Prince.
Right, anniversary of his death in that, yes.
And also a big article in yesterday's Sunday paper. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I read that whole thing and learned a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, once again, ladies and gentlemen, my guest this morning, by the way, I'm playing 1984 music because that's the year you bought a plane that we're going to be talking about.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But here's the deal. I saw a report on television. It could have been Don Shelby. Mm-hmm. And it was about theft in regards to baggage handlers mm-hmm. across the nation mm-hmm. and how they would go at them. And the ones that were unlocked, simply unzip them and mm-hmm. take what you want. The ones that are wrapped in cellophane, they kind of leave alone. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about how that situation with that fellow that was a mechanic mm-hmm. Certainly wasn't the only one that was going on.
That well, in Minneapolis at MSP, that was pretty much our largest one. Now, what we also had during that time, we didn't have. This was during the development of airport security. So there really wasn't airport security, per se. Now they have basically very high-tech powered, to the quality of medical machines, MRIs, that scan, and they can see everything in your bags. And you'll notice every once in a while, and we see this, there'll be a note. United States TSA, we have inspected your bag. Thank you for the opportunity to help us keep the airways safe. And they will open up your bag. In fact, it's basically told out, don't lock your luggage, because they will open them. they know all the Samsonite tricks and all this stuff as far as opening. So there's really no need to lock your bags. Some people that tape up the cardboard boxes and all this, they will simply cut them open if they really have to look at something. But they'll tape them back up. When I left Northwest Airlines, I think we had 3 scanners. And we were up to a point where 100% of the bags going on the airplanes were scanned. And they're very, very good. They can see the explosives, guns, knives, good Lord, everything. And you can take a gun. We went one time to Glacier National Park, and I took my son's handgun. I don't know what, as the ranger told me, he says, Mr. Bates, are you a very good shot with that? And I says, I shot it a couple times in my backyard. Well, all that's going to do is just make a grizzly angrier.
Oh, okay.
Because he says they'll charge you within, you have like 2.5 to 3 seconds usually, before they get to you. And but anyway, getting back to the baggage, they check everything 100% now. It's really a relatively, safe program. The biggest thing was the MRIs, because now they can see through everything. And when in doubt, always put it in your checked bags, because there's many, many items they will not allow. In fact, another little story, right after 9/11, of course, because the perpetrators used, basically cardboard baggage cutters, with a razor blade in it. That was their weapons. So immediately the government said, the FAA and everything, okay, we're going to do 100% scanning of people going on the airplane. No knives, no fingernails. I mean, nothing. And I remember...
fingernail clips.
Clippers. Yeah. Fingernail clippers. Anything with a sharp edge. Anything. So after about 2-3 months, all of a sudden, the TSA came down to my office and says, hey, Davey, do you have a place? We've got about 10, 12, 50-gallon barrels full of Swiss Army knives and Bowie knives and sharp objects and letter openers, all sorts of stuff that people had on their carry-on or on their personal. And, of course, we were at the time used to doing that. I said, sure, bring them down. We'll dump them in my metal dumpster. So we all of a sudden dumped them all in there. Well, it didn't take long when you have about 5,000 mechanics, and that's what Northwest had there, rebuilding, to get the word out that, you know, there's Swiss Army knives and all. And we had a dumpster almost full. Well, by the end of the day, they were all gone. And I just, all of a sudden, the shop steward came up, and I said to him, I says, oh, I says, Tommy, I think we got a problem here. If the public finds out that the TSA takes all their nice, expensive pocket knives and all their little, you know, cherished items, and then Northwest Mechanics take them home the next day, I think we're going to have a problem. And I got a hold of the TSA. Of course, I couldn't stop what already happened. But the next day, I talked to the TSA, and then from there on, and to this date yet, I believe, I know it then, we set it up that they went to the Goodwill stores. And they would just, you know, sell them and stuff like that. But that's something, you don't see much of that happening very often now. People, you know, it's been almost, you know, over 10 years since that time frame. And people are pretty sharp now as far as what you bring on the airplane.
You know what they do to me?
What's that?
They pull me aside, and they give me a chair. And another person comes and with a little kit, and they make me remove my... prostheses.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they take that off. They don't check the limb. They mm-hmm. just check the prostheses, and they wipe something. And I'm an intrigued individual. Mm-hmm. I always wonder what's going on. Mm-hmm. And they say they can detect explosives yes. with a simple swipe of a cloth.
Yes.
And I don't know how that works, but mm-hmm. Anyhow, yeah. they make me take right. it off and sit there. And,
yep.
And they have a guard by me, like, oh, yeah. I'm going to get up and run.
Well, the dogs that you see the police have
and the dogs, yeah.
are phenomenal. In fact, my wife, again, being a medical person, and we have a little German Shepherd, and I remember asking one time, and her hobby is cooking, and I said, so how good are the dogs' noses? And she said, well, different breeds are, of course, better, but on average... We humans can walk in the house and say, wow, we're having beef stew tonight. Well, the dog will walk in the house and say, there's carrots, celery, you know, oregano. The dog will tell you exactly all the ingredients yeah. into it. It's a million times more sensitive than what we are as yeah. humans. It's phenomenal what they can do for us.
I watched those dogs on this new show called PD or something. It's a three-hour show mm-hmm. from eight different communities, and it's always marijuana. Mm-hmm. So I read about something in the New York, what are the airports in New York?
LaGuardia, JFK, one of those two.
Yeah, probably. And that there were gang members that brought in drugs,
yep.
and they worked with the people on the ground.
I can tell you about that, too.
Yeah, well, tell me about that.
We had problems, in fact. This would be in the late 90s. And where it really came to a head, because I saw all the billboards, always on 494, we had a manager in Boston, a gal, that she was what we call a ramp manager, ramp operations. She's in charge of the baggage handlers and the guys that are throwing the bags and things like that. Well, anyway, she got wind of it, and what these gangs tried to do, they don't do it anymore because we're just so good at detecting it, but they did for a long time. They would get some clean record, younger people in, pay them big-time money, get them hired by American Airlines, Northwest Airlines, whoever, work the ramp, then they would say, okay, we're sending a box of, you know, drugs, flight 687 on, it'll get into MSP at such and such a time. Well, of course, the baggage handlers, you know, they're down in there, they're unloading the airplanes, and even Northwest Airlines, as an example, we would have intercompany shipping, you know, shipping airplane parts, whatever, you know. So we always had an area that was just, you know, for that. But they would ship it then, what they call COMAT, company material. So the right guy would look in there, oh, that one's mine, and he'd just set it off to the side, and then he would, and they always made it so that, of course, it would fit in one of those, the infamous igloo lunch boxes, you know, and they'd fit inside there. You know, that could hold a lot of cocaine, a lot of heroin, you know. They didn't do much marijuana because it was too bulky. But the that was a definite problem. Well, this manager of ours found out about it, got the police involved. They captured the people on the ramp and all that. And then about 6 months later, she was found in her car and 50, 60, sadly, bullet holes in her. In her, and she was in the trunk of her car. And so she was murdered. And I don't recall yet if they've ever found out who caused that. But Northwest Airlines put up an amazing amount of money for reward and everything. And that was to, you know, sent out as a signal. Boston can be a rough airport. But now, since with all the detection devices, that's, they can't do that. They can't have that shipping. But that was done LAX. And, of course, right now what they're fighting is the stuff coming in from China and the Far East, these opiate drugs, because they're really trying to get their machines tuned in because they look like normal pills. Where cocaine, heroin, you know, there's certain signatures that they look for. And the pills are very hard to detect by smell with the dogs. So you've heard how you can mail order, you know, this stuff. Well, that's what's happening. It's a problem that they'll address. They'll get it technically figured out because they'll get the density signatures down, you know, and stuff, and then they'll simply open up more items, and they'll, you know, it takes a little time, the learning curve, but the bad boys always seem to go ahead of us.
What about international flights that directly to the St. Paul Minneapolis airport?
Mm-hmm.
Are they more prone to checking people?
Absolutely. Many times the wife, like I say, speaks all over the world, and I'm, like I say, I'm the cabana boy now. And you take any of the flights that are coming to the U.S., and what they're called is direct flights, and certain airports right now, as an example, I'll just pick as an example. Say you're going to fly out of Istanbul, Turkey, to JFK first and then come to Minneapolis. Well, you're going to almost have a complete body search. They will literally put you through the x-ray machine. Some of them don't have the MRI machines, you know, that we have. So they will actually frisk you. You have to open up every piece of your baggage. They will ask you to turn on your iPad because, of course, they can gut these iPads, you know, and then pack them with, you know, plastic explosives. Take your shoes off. They x-ray those. I mean, yes, they will do that. That's demanded. Not by the Turkish authorities, but by the U.S. And otherwise, they just won't let, if they don't do this type of, and there'll be one or two TSA people that travel over to ensure that it is being done properly. Now, if that flight, say, goes to Amsterdam, you won't get checked that bad. But when it comes out of, say, KLM, coming back, say, to Minneapolis, that's one of the big, you know, partners, it'll certainly get checked there. And
what about, did you know the marshals? That, if I recall, there's supposed to be a marshal on every plane after 9/11,
mm-hmm.
and they would be in plain clothes.
Right.
It wouldn't be a security guard uniform.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a break and then tell me some stories about that, all right?
Okay.
Dave Bates is my guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and he is here by way of, Highway 60 and then Highway 3. He lives off of the Kelly Dudley Lake in western Faribault.
It's time to do some of those building projects you've been putting off. Contact Wooddock Construction in Denison. They build new homes, barns, ag buildings, garages, and they also remodel homes. Wooddock Construction has over 30 years of experience in home interior, exterior, and agricultural construction. Call Emery at 507-271-4200 for an estimate. Wooddock Construction in Denison wishes the FFA members the best at the state FFA convention.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
Farmers Mill and Elevator in Castle Rock has everything today's farmer needs, from seed, fertilizer, herbicide, and custom application. They have all your spring needs. Farmers Mill and Elevator has over 70 years of experience working with the area farmers to achieve the best possible products. Farmers Mill and Elevator in Castle Rock salutes the FFA members at the state convention. The Farmers Mill and Elevator is a proud supporter of FFA programs.
When you need cement or masonry work done, think of DNS Cement in Northfield. DNS Cement provides superior concrete and masonry work. They pour walls for both home and business. Poured walls provide more strength and are more energy efficient. DNS also does concrete driveways, swimming pool decks, and has decorative concrete too. They'd be happy to provide you with an estimate and go over all of your plans. If you're building, contact DNS Cement in Northfield at 507-663-1294.
Innovation drives performance, and the team at Syngenta and Stanton is working hard in the research labs, greenhouses, and fields to address the current and future needs of our local and global farmers. Syngenta is about going beyond their products, bringing added value through service with one goal in mind, bringing plant potential to life. The Syngenta Research Station in Stanton also supports the education and leadership skills that FFA provides to young men and women, and would like to recognize and wish good luck to the Cannon Falls FFA members attending the Minnesota State Convention.
Music from 1984. Name this tune.
Well, it's Kenny is his first name.
Yep.
Kenny Loggins.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Good for you.
And as soon as he starts it, it'll be in the title. As soon as his first line of the song. So many of these became movie songs.
It is 20 minutes before 10 o'clock on an absolutely gorgeous Monday morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on. My guest this morning is David Bates, and I got to go back to 1939, if I may, in Germany. Mm-hmm. After her Jewish mother is shot at a checkpoint, 15-year-old Sarah meets a mysterious man with an ambiguous accent. A suspiciously bare apartment and a locked box full of weapons. Terry Knight's guest today on 15 with the author is British resident Matt Killeen with his young adult debut novel, Orphan, Monster, Spy. He discusses his research, his process of writing, as well as how he developed the main characters. Sarah teams up with Mystery Man and will become the Nazis' worst nightmare. That's at 11 o'clock this morning, 15 with the author with Terry Knight. I'm back to David Bates, hearing very interesting stories. He was the number one guy in the ground crew at Northwest Orient Airlines, and I have asked about different things, and now we're getting on to the marshals. After 9/11, the government said, we are going to put a marshal on every flight, and they will be plain clothes. You won't know who it is. And I'm wondering, in your position at Northwest, which is a high position, what incidents can you tell us about the marshals on planes?
We didn't interact. They had their own world that they dealt with, very secretive, needless to say. And we would run into the supervisors, who actually wouldn't even ride the airplane. So those are the people we primarily dealt with. But some of the interesting things, they go plain clothes. They might come as dressed as a businessman. They could be dressed, you know, with the cutoffs in the New York Yankees T-shirt, you know, type deal. One thing kind of interesting is, yes, they have guns, but they're specially designed guns. And when they go on board, of course, they have to identify themselves to the crew. So the crew and all the flight attendants know who they are. And there's a bond between that. I mean, they, you know, needless to say, they're all in the same boat. There's no place to hide up
there. Is there like a secret signal?
I guess so. I have to admit.
You don't know.
Don't know because it's secret.
Okay.
If they told me, everybody would know because I talk too much.
Okay.
But the one thing
no,
that
no, you don't talk too much. Come on, David.
I was talking to one of the supervisors, and I asked. I says, I got a stupid question. I'm good at those. And I says, what the hell they do when they shoot a gun? I mean, you could go through decompression and all that. He says, we have designed the bullets not to penetrate the skin of the airplane, to go through decompression. Ah, okay. He says, it's much easier to, you know, penetrate, let's say, human flesh in the body, and they don't have to go through the aluminum-skinned, double-skinned on the airplanes or the windows. Because they, you know, we just lost a young lady with Southwest. She got
sucked out of the window
halfway,
oh,
right?
Yeah,
and that basically did
it. What a horrible way to die!
The only blessing is it's instant. You know, it's so quick. You know, thank goodness. But anyway, that's those. Amazingly, they're on all international flights, but because of budget cuts, some domestic flights don't have them on. That's the only thing I know that they've changed in a sense. But all the international flights throughout the world and that they're on, in fact, they will sometimes be two or three. And that's because of the large size of the airplanes, especially some of the new Airbus ones where they have, you know, different levels and that they have that. Plus, another rule that has happened that's kind of interesting, and it was because of the Lufthansa flight that the co-pilot committed suicide. He flew that Airbus into the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
At well over 600, 700 miles. The only blessing there is, of course, just poof, you know, you're gone. And they found, you know, just hardly anything. Just the plane exploded, of course. But now there's a rule. It had been in the U.S. with the FAA. You must always have two human beings in the cockpit. Always. Pilot's got to go to the restroom. That's fine. But then a flight attendant, if you're in an airplane, you'll see a flight attendant go in or something like that. But that's just to maintain just in case. And they've been trained what to do if something happens there and that. But that's something that in Europe, they just didn't do that rule. Well, after that flight, in fact, the next day, they announced they had changed the ruling in that. And that was why.
That is so foolish and mean to want to die and take all those people with you that
right.
You don't even know.
Yeah, I saw the tape for it, and it was just, you could hear the pilot just banging on the door, pleading with them to open. And so, you know, the rest is to your imagination. You know, in the last seconds, you know what happened.
So the black box is orange,
mm-hmm. Right? Technically, it is, yes.
And do you, as a mechanic supervisor, do you have men checked? I mean, does it have to be checked if they work all the time?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That would be in the electronics area, which wasn't mine, you know, as far as the flight instruments and all that. Oh, yes, they have to be checked every so often. And again, when they go through the complete heavy checks, when they completely tear down an airplane and put it back together. That's something that always amazed me. I always took people when vendors would come in selling their products, you know, Ford Motor, GM, all this stuff. I would always take them over to Building C and show them a whale. Well, a whale is a 747. In fact, they flew the last one here about a month or so ago. Delta no longer has any more 747s because they didn't have any anyway. It was all Northwest Airlines, so it was finally retired.
I remember. I went to Chicago,
mm-hmm.
And on the way back, this was when they were first introduced.
Okay.
We got on the 747, and it took off and landed. That's what they did with that thing.
Yep.
And it was a storm, and mm-hmm. when it came in, they had to abort their landing because of a plane in front of them. Mm-hmm. And that huge 747, all of a sudden, all that power.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, this is crazy. But we circled, came mm-hmm. and landed. But what a huge plane it was.
Oh, it's phenomenal. I would always go in a certain door into the check hangar, they call them. And this would be those hangars that you used to see on 494. You'd look in. And because I had mechanics that took care of all the gantries that would come down against them, and that's where they did heavy checks. So a plane was in there usually for about a month, and they did it about every 5, 6, 7 years, depending on the model of the airplane. And they take everything out. It's literally just a shell. They x-ray all the fittings that hold the wings on. They swing the gear. The floor pulls away so they can swing the gear, and they support it on jacks. New engines, new wiring, seats, windows. I mean, it's basically a brand new airplane. If we did that to our cars every 5-6 years, we could run our cars, you know, forever too. And a lot of these airplanes, they run them for 30 years. It's not unusual. But I would take them in. Then I'd walk them up into the entry, which is 5 stories up to get into a 747. And I'd open up the door, and it'd almost hit gas because it was just a little platform. The whole fuselage inside was nothing more than a big tube. In other words, the floors were taken out, cockpits, everything. And you see wire bundles that were, say, 6-8 inches in diameter with hundreds of wires. And then I always tell them, and they kind of, usually they're technical people, so they'll say, in 1 month they put this thing all back together? And I says, you know what's amazing? There's 3 shifts working on it. And these are your next door neighbors, okay? The crazy mechanic, all these guys that ride the Harleys and that, okay, they come to work. Hey, Ralph, what'd you do? Well, I did this, okay, and they just verbally turn it over. But anyway, in 30 days, they get it all done. And I had the opportunity a couple times because I got to know the crew chiefs in those departments. And so I'd get to sit, say, in the co-pilot seat, and we would taxi that 747 to the bullpen. And what that was is they still have it there. That's where you can run up the engines. They'd run up the engines, test it, hold the brakes, you know, and test each engine. It took them sometimes 3-4 hours, but they go through all the checks. What's amazing is the electronics on these new airplanes. They don't have to go down to Rochester anymore like they used to and do a bunch of touch and goes. In other words, you know, when I rebuild an airplane, oh my God, I fly around the Faribault Airport for at least an hour. I'm not brave enough to even come up to Dundas, you know, because, you know, I put it together. So I really got to make sure it's right. But they just go right to the bullpen, run it up, and then I was lucky enough, they shut it down. I got on board, and they says, okay, Batesy, you can taxi it. We'll make sure you don't do anything dumb, you know, because you are a manager, you know. You had a lobotomy to become a manager. Yes, I did. Yes, that's how you become a manager at Northwest Airlines. That was the union's joke, you know. And so we taxi up to gate, you know, the Gold Concourse number 2 for the Narita flight. That airplane is not even test flown or anything, but it's gone through all, you know, the functional checks. They'll load approximately, say, 300-some people on there, fill it with fuel. And I remember I got off, jumped in my little pickup truck, put my little Kojak lights, you know, a little beacon up on top, and I drove to the end of the runway over by that Super America gas station. I'm out there on the runway, off the runway on a taxiway. And here comes that big old heavy whale. The wings are drooping. You know, they're full of fuel. Those are wet wings. That's where most of the fuel tanks are. So they taxi out. All of a sudden, they give full power. And a little side note, when they're flying on that flight, when they used to fly the 47s to Narita, Japan, Tokyo, they got priority. If they taxied around for more or sat for more with the engines running more than 30 minutes, they had to come back and get more fuel. That's how tight those flights were. But basically, they taxi out and take off. And it was just, to me, it was just awe-inspiring what us human beings do, because that big old whale would lift its nose, and those wings start just bending back, because they're carrying the lift. And it's just a smidge below 1,000,000 pounds. Isn't that amazing? 900-some thousand wet, what they say when you're wet and loaded.
Yeah.
And that airplane grunts off, and when it's really hot, 90 degrees, high humidity, hot, what we call high density, you know, air, thin air, you know, bad air, we call it as pilots. That old airplane, those engines are just putting out a haze of, you know, extra power, and it just, remember, you used to see those things just because they're so big, look like they're just crawling across Richfield and that, and you're going, boy, I hope that thing doesn't, you know, miss a beat on those engines. But they get up to altitude, and next stop is Narita.
Wow.
You know, 14 hours later. And that airplane was never tested. And all those crazy mechanics put it all together, and it won't be back there for 6 to 7 years.
It would say the word trust has to certainly be...
trust and fantastic mechanics.
Yep. We're going to take a final break this hour. It is 7 minutes before 10 o'clock. My guest this morning is David Bates.
Simon Brothers Cement has been providing quality masonry service for the surrounding area since 1969. Simon Brothers does all sorts of concrete or block work, including residential driveways and stamped or exposed aggregate patios. Simon Brothers also does ag-related concrete work and is proud of our local FFA members attending the Minnesota State FFA Convention. Contact Simon Brothers Cement at 612-328-4500. 612-328-4591 for an estimate on your next concrete project. That's 612-328-4591.
If you're considering that new or pre-owned vehicle purchase, you can buy with confidence at Milo Peterson Ford in Kenyon. It's been a pleasure to serve you with quality vehicles from which to choose. Remember, they always have all their cars and trucks on sale 313 days a year. See their large selection of new trucks. Milo Peterson Ford in Kenyon, family-owned for over 50 years, salutes the Kenyon-Wanamingo FFA members at the state convention.
Name that tune. I always remember what year this song was.
Oh, Ghostbusters.
Yeah, but do you remember who did it?
Yes, it was the Afro-American fella, I believe. Billy. No. Oh, then I just... Something strange in your neighborhood. I think, wasn't he one of the actors, too, in the movie? No, I couldn't tell you.
First name is Ray.
Oh, yeah, I'm drawing a blank now, but if you...
It's Ray Parker Jr.
Yep. There you go.
Had a friend that owned Tires Plus.
Okay.
And he had a studio do a commercial with this music.
Oh, really?
When you need some tires, who are you going to call? Tires Plus! He got... a letter.
Mm-hmm. Permission, yeah.
Yeah. Do not use that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah, I'm sure.
I don't know if you paid a fine, but yeah, I'll never forget that. Back in 1984.
Wow.
Well, here we are at 6 minutes before 10 o'clock. I've got a great storyteller with me, and I'm enjoying his description on various things as his job as manager of the ground crew at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. And, we just had a great story about the 747 mm-hmm. Being rebuilt, etc. All right, what about those guys that do the luggage handling? Mm-hmm. Is it like hustle, 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 sit around? Hustle, 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 sit around?
They really don't get much time between flights because, again, flights are coming and going, and they have other responsibilities. Those fellas really earn their money because you get those hot days. They're in the, used to be DC-9s, now the MD-80s and 90s. They're on their knees throwing bags out, and it's just stifling hot. And I know the managers, granted, I manage primarily all the equipment, those belt loaders and all that, but the ramp managers always have lemonade. And you know, boy, if anybody was feeling a little dizzy or, you know, heat stroke, and those fellas were in great shape. You want to get in shape, you become a baggage handler. Because I swear, when I had to go up and help throw bags, the old joke was, in fact, I think it came from a TV commercial, I swear grandma was in some of those bags, how heavy they are. Because they can be heavier than the, you know, say 50, 70 pounds. You just pay a, you know, extra fee. And oh my God, they're heavy.
Now, when you had the golf clubs come out of the off the ramp and mm-hmm. screw up the belt and block mm-hmm. it and all that. Mm-hmm. Some union guy did that on purpose mm-hmm. and put the golf clubs with the clubs facing down.
Mm-hmm.
And then he knew they would screw up the thing there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find out who that was?
Once in a while.
Fire
you do.
Them?
No, once in a while you do. Sometimes you don't. You know, you get into the politics. Basically managing human emotions and people. If you do that right in the heat of negotiations, you know, part of it is they'll just simply say, hey, that person was so frustrated and had debts, you know, that they, if they weren't getting this raise, we may have to, they'll have a list of people that they want hired back. And that's all part of the negotiations, let alone just wages and benefits and that. So they would get disciplined, they might get reassigned, all this stuff, performance enhancement, they call it, you know, trying to, you know, tell them that you really are hurting the people that pay our salaries.
Do managers get harassed by the stewards?
Not too much, no. I mean, the stewards have a very tough job. And I always remember a shop steward for the mechanics, that's who I dealt with. Larry was his first name, and he was really an old pro. He says, Davey, you know, I've got to represent all of them. And if I had my druthers, there'd be some I'd throw out. You know, they're slugs. But we have to represent them all. And we had some intense deals, like I say, work performance. Some mechanics aren't working well. They just start, you know, it's different. We all have our good days and bad days. But when they weren't performing, the typical thing was they'd say, Mr. Bates, I don't mind carrying my tools, but I ain't carrying his tools, you know, that type of deal. And that meant that that mechanic wasn't pulling his weight. And we'd have to work with them, and many of the shop stewards were good. I'll tell you what, they would get out there, and they'd have a come-to-Jesus meeting with the mechanic to, hey, what's your problem? Let's get up to do you need more training? Aren't you feeling well? Do you really have a bad back? You know, this type of deal, and you get involved with all that kind of stuff. But that's all part of management.
One of the things that always I noticed when I was on a plane, Marriott.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm going to ask?
The food?
Yeah.
Oh, airline food is airline food. I guess, you know, when you really think about it, they have to prepare it hours and hours ahead. It sits at the food service dock. It goes into one of my trucks. It's hauled out there. They try to keep it warm. They feed it to you. There's some good and bad airlines. Korean Airlines, oh, my God, the food is fantastic. Air France, needless to say, French worship food, so there's good. You get into some others, and I mean, you're just better off to get a bag of peanuts and a Coke, you know. But that's, now, if you fly business class, they really don't have first class anymore, they call it business class. We've had the opportunity to do that once in a while through my wife, through her work. Wow, it's amazing some of the meals, the gourmet meals. And it doesn't necessarily mean if you're coming out of Amsterdam, the meal's great. We've had great meals coming out of Minneapolis. So it's the vendors. There's different vendors doing it. The airlines, you know, vendor, as they say, farm it out, vendor it out to different food companies.
I remember somebody telling me that worked for Marriott, mm-hmm. that they actually got down to, I can't remember if it's going to be olive or a tomato, cherry tomato, but they, whatever it was, they said if they reduce by taking one mm-hmm. little piece out of that salad, that the savings was unbelievable. I mean, we as normal people, mm-hmm. you take one olive out of for a year and you saved $100,000 or whatever.
Right.
It's coming up on 10 o'clock, so we have to do the news, David. And
okay.
By the way, David Bates and I are going to be talking about his flying experiences and the fact that you built your own airplane.
Restored one,
restored
yes.
one. Mm-hmm. And have bought one in 1984 that today, if you would have kept it, he'd be a multimillionaire. This is your radio station. We are KYMN from Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 on your AM dial, and now 95.1 FM, The One.
Killer sought, state visit. I'm John Trout. The manhunt continues for the suspect in yesterday's Antioch, Tennessee shooting that left four people dead.
There have been no credible sightings of Travis Reinking since he was accused of walking into this Waffle House and shooting and killing four people. He's been on the run ever since, and what makes this shooting that happened early Sunday all the more unnerving is the criminal history, the past police history that Reinking has.
There's Nick Valencia. Emmanuel Macron arrives in Washington today. One of the French president's priorities, try to get President Trump to agree to a compromise nuclear deal with Iran, something Trump promised to scrap. Melissa Bell reports from Paris.
He's made it clear that he's unhappy with the way the deal is. And of course, behind the scenes over the course of the last few weeks, there have been an awful lot of negotiations going on between European countries and the United States on this question, how best to save it. The Europeans could be planning to give some reassurances in the shape of further European sanctions with regard to ballistic missiles, for instance. But really, the thing to look for over the coming days is how far Emmanuel Macron is willing to go towards Donald Trump on the question of what happens to the deal beyond 2025.
Democrats on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee are expected to block President Trump's pick for Secretary of State. GOP Senator Todd Young is on that panel and spoke to Mike Pompeo's qualifications.
He's incredibly intelligent, finishing first in his class at West Point. He's proven himself not just in the House of Representatives as a subject matter expert in this area, but he's earned the confidence and the support of the President of the United States. Very important if you're going to be the chief diplomat of our government.
Planned talks with North Korea are progressing.
There's working level talks going on at the moment, the DMZ, between North and South Koreans, trying to hammer out all the last minute details, the protocol, the media access.
There's Paula Hancock's. Prince William and his wife Kate announced the birth of a boy, 8 pounds, 7 ounces, the couple's third child. I'm John Trout. Back live and in color on the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station, 95.1 FM, The One. And for nearly 50 years, KYMN AM 1080 on your radio dial. In studio, I have a guest by the name of David Bates. He is a local pilot, retired, married to a very interesting woman. And I was wondering if you're with Northwest Airlines, and you're the baggage manager, or not the baggage, the ground crew manager. Do they move you around, like to Boston or to Los Angeles or New York City?
Well, when I had to substitute for a few months, my cohort at LAX, Los Angeles International, he passed away, he had a heart attack. Great guy. And so I would fly out Monday mornings and come back Thursday afternoons and manage that operation, and then come back and on Friday kind of keep up with mine. But I remember the first day I was out there, I met the airport director who works for the airport authority. And he says, "Mr. Bates, I need to give you a tour of the airport, of the do's and don'ts. This isn't like your little flyover town of MSP." And I said, "Oh, no, this is Oz. This is the great and honorable LAX." He says, "Get in my Suburban. Let's go, kid." Okay. So I hop in, and he was just like, you know, your typical, very autocratic, you know, "And this is this, and this and this." Then we drove around to the international side, and he says, "Look, you see that airplane coming in with the black sooty trail behind it? That's the Russians." I says, "How do you know that's the Russians?" "Because they have no emission controls on their engines. They're the old 1950s type technology, and they just scream. The noise is deafening on the ramp." But anyway, I learned something there. You can always tell when the Russians show up. And of course, we don't have, you know, Aeroflop. And he would call it Aeroflop. he says, "Don't ever want to fly on a Russian airplane, kid." Okay. Well, then we drove over by the Israeli terminal, and he says, "Let's wait. Yep, here he comes. Here comes a LAL flight." They taxi in. And then three big black Suburbans pull up, kind of one on each wing and at the tail. And then two other fellows walk on top of the jet bridge. And they had, you know, like men in black. They had their big black suits. And you knew they had, you know, like I say, an AR-15 or good Lord, whatever, okay? And he says, "You know, kid, if you really had any gumption, you'd get out of this vehicle now and run towards that airplane screaming, 'Praise be Allah.'" And I said, "Well, I think I'll pass on that, sir." He says, "Good, because you know what they do? They won't kill you. They won't. Oh, no. They're trained just to take your kneecaps and your lower feet off with their automatic weapons. They want to talk to you. So they will immediately put tourniquets on you to keep you alive. You know, that's the, and I forget the name now, but that's the Secret Service, you know, of, and they're one of the best in the world." So I saw, and if you notice, you don't hear too many people ever terrorizing Israelis, you know, with their airlines and things like that. They really do, in fact, we all learn from them. They go a little over top. They profile, because we've gone through there, and because, you know, what 90-year-old Caucasian grandma is going to be wearing a bomb suit, you know? Mostly not, but at LAX it was amazing with the international flights coming in and out of there, and it was just interesting to see the people in that. But that was an experience to witness the security that, and that's every day. That's not just because there's a dignitary on board. That's just when you fly LL, and they come in, they have their their people, professionals all over the world in that, handling their flights.
Well, have you had LL at St. Paul Minneapolis Airport?
They might come in for a special flight, but they don't have a gate. No.
But to go to Mayo.
Well, now that's in Rochester. Oh, yeah, and that's another whole. My wife, in fact, has seen some foreign dignitaries, and she's one of the top neurologists. You know, she always, oh, how did I ever marry a cheesehead? You'd think my mother would have taught me better, you know. But they basically, when they fly into Rochester, everything is done very discreetly. Because in all fairness, entertainers, VIPs, heads of state, if you aren't feeling well, you just don't want to deal with the public. You know, just, you know, God bless you, but, you know, especially entertainers, you know, I mean, they thrive for public, but just when they're going to the Mayo, nobody goes to the Mayo because you want to. If you're going to the Mayo, something isn't right. But they'll take them in a limousine that's looks like a normal car. They take them to what's called the freight elevator at the Mayo and Gonda building there. They go down below. They get in the freight elevator. Well, it's a very nice, you know, plush elevator. And what it does is it goes up. If you've ever been there, it'll go up and gets off at each floor. There's 16 stories there. And it'll get off already in the exam room area. So they don't have to go through the patient area where you and I would sit out in the waiting rooms. They can come in and out of there, literally, and especially, you know, with their entourage, because some of them will have their entourage just for support, or they're the Secret Service. Barbara Bush was a major benefactor of the Mayo, and she just was passed away and had her services this weekend. But at Minneapolis, it isn't quite like that. We used to have to do special procedures for Air Force One when either the vice president. When Gorbachev came, that was a big deal. And he flew in a Russian jet, and that was one of the few times we saw one ever at Minneapolis.
Did it have black smoke?
Oh, you betcha. Lots of we all had to go out and listen to those screaming old engines that we used to have.
Yeah.
The old ramjet engines versus the turbofan engines that we have now. And that. So that was always interesting. But I guess one thing I always found amazing at the airport was just non-stop people. Everybody's got their own little world. Going to go see grandma. I have to go to a funeral. I'm getting fired at the corporate headquarters. I'm getting a promotion. And I would sometimes just, you know, to take a little break, I would just sit in the terminal and just watch people go. You never see the same person once, twice. And it was just amazing thinking how at an airport, and I'm sure in the old, it was used to be the train station, Union Depot down in St. Paul. You know,
Do you remember that?
No, I missed that.
Used the train.
Yep. No, that same deal. I mean, same type of deal. How we all are in our own little worlds and our own little universes with our concerns in life and joys and whatever in that. So, but that the airport now, and especially it's just fascinating how literally. Last November, we spent 2 weeks in Vietnam and a week in Cambodia because my wife had to speak at some neurology, and we took some tours. And I took my old boss from Ford Motor to who was a Vietnam vet. He was with the 82nd Airborne, and he'd never been back, and things like that. But it's just the airports are a fascinating world. Plus the fact of all the food and everything else they have there, and they're constantly improving. As much as we may whine about the service, they do. Mother Nature still controls. In fact, just this past snowstorm we had, you know, our heaviest one ever, and I didn't even know this because I had already been gone, but they had MSP closed for just a little over 8 hours. That had never happened before. They always were able to keep at least one runway open, but it just got so much with them, they had to shut down. Not just, we'd always seen 1 or 2 hours. Not a big deal. Jets have enough fuel on, they can serve. But 8 hours, you know, they were diverting airplanes to other airports, and, I mean, that was a real mess. But that's Mother Nature. Live to fly another day.
And then they stranded people in Mexico.
Yes, that was another whole
issue.
On
my favorite airline,
yeah.
Sun Country.
Yeah.
Now it's gone.
Yeah, sadly, the CEO, though, came from that other airline that was on 60 Minutes. I forget the name of it now, but that was on us 2 weeks ago.
Southwest.
Not South, Advent, or I forget the name
of
it.
Oh, yeah.
He used to be the CEO there. He's quite a cost cutter. He wants to be a low-cost airfare guy. Anyway, what's amazing, though, is that public pressure, Sun Country did the right thing then, and they came back and reimbursed their people to get them back home. So that ultimately it took them a day or two to make that. They were pressured, I think.
Yeah, well,
but at least they did the right thing, and that's good. Good for them.
And now they aren't Sun Country.
Pardon?
And now they aren't going to be Sun Country. Somebody else bought them and is going to rename it.
I hadn't heard that.
I don't know.
I'm not up to speed on that. No,
I don't know, but I know I got into a car, a rental car in Orlando, Florida, and my wife was going to drive. She's really good at traffic compared to me. And I'm in the back seat, and I'm thinking, let's get something to eat. And I reach for my wallet, and it's not there. So I tell Julie, I said, I lost my wallet. And what can you do? You're in the traffic now. You got to get out of there. So we went to the condominium that we bought at a charity auction in Fort Lauderdale. Anyhow, I called the airline, and they said they'd see what they could do. And this woman, I got her. I have her phone number in my cell phone. Called me back, and she says, "We found your wallet, and we're going to send it on flight so-and-so, and you have to go to the airport and go to the security desk." And I went there, and here comes the captain of the airplane that just flew in, and he hands the security guy a FedEx-like envelope, and then handed it to me and said, "Open it up." So I opened it up, and there was my wallet, with, you know, my credit cards and driver's license and all that, but also $300+ in cash.
Oh my goodness!
And I called the lady back and told her I got it, and Crystal, her name was Crystal, and I said thank you. I said, "Where did you find it?" She said, "Well, when it came back to Minneapolis, they were cleaning the plane.
Sure, the cleaners found
it. And they found it, and they turned it in.
Oh yes."
And they could have put that in their pocket.
No, that, you know, in all fairness, sometimes we don't give humanity enough credit. There's many, many more good people than there is people with a shady, you know, pattern of behavior. Let's leave it as that. And that you'll see many times. I remember one time I had almost 100-some mechanics scouring the bag room in the ramp area for lady's cat that got out of the cage. Oh, my God. I mean, it even got out. And it could, the good thing was, I forget, one of my mechanics found it. Oh, thank God. I mean, and of course, now there, you call all the television stations and you want the good PR there. Now, it's sad that somehow the cage got open, you know, that type of deal. But still, we found the cat, and oh, my God. I mean, it was just amazing, you know, that what we went through to get the cat. And but those are good. There's vast majority of people working that ramp.
What do they do with those portable, the animals that they want to transport with them?
They basically, well, of course, you heard now, even our legislature here in Minnesota is making it a crime to call your pet a companion dog, and that, which is very, some people need it. My wife.
You had the duck and all that stuff.
Yes, crazy. But no, basically what they do is, if you want to take your dog on vacation, which I admit, the wife and I talk about taking our little shepherd called Shelby out to, say, some of the national parks where they allow dogs on leashes and da-da-da. It's a little expensive. It's not cheap. That's why these people scam the companion pass deal. But they basically have an area in the hold of the airplane, and that's where they go. And again, that's pressurized and temperature controlled. And that. So that's where basically they put it. Some, and airlines all have different policies. Some absolutely won't do it. Some do it. You know, so you'd have to check with your carrier and that, whoever you're flying
with. You couldn't put a horse on it.
Not on there. But now Northwest Airlines Freight, oh, my Lord. You know, they went, of course, to the Orient. And they many times would take cattle, goats, pigs, you know, for breeding purposes and all that, and horses. And, once in a while, there was a couple stories where they might get a little loose, or they just start kicking, and you take a 2,000-pound bull that's doesn't want to be there. That can be pretty intense. And so there's those pilots. In fact, at Northwest, the highest-paid pilots were the freight pilots. They weren't the people, you know, say, flying the passenger 747s. They were the ones flying the freight because they were actually paid on the weight of the cargo they made. So they actually made a little bit more than the pilots just flying the people in that. And that's a very dangerous job because, again, if those loads shift, I remember Coletta Airlines flies out of Detroit, Connie Coletta, the famous drag racer. That was how he made his money was, you know, hauling freight for the Army, you know, whoever, you know, contract freight hauler. One of his 747s, they took off, and I'm just, oh, I can only imagine the fate of the crew. They were lost in the crash, but they took off from an airport, don't remember where, but they had a massive load shift. The loading straps broke, and it all slid back, and you can just see the airplane just almost go right up on its tail. You see the engines go to full power. He tries to get the nose down, and it just rolls over, and, of course, at that point, it's full of fuel, and it just consumes itself in a ball of fire. So where otherwise people are going to stay in their seats, you know, and the luggage is all stacked, so it really can't move, you know, and that type of deal in the hold. So there, it's as far as weight shifting, that's generally not a concern on the regular things.
It's 18 minutes after 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is David Bates, and he's chomping at the bit to talk about his experiences flying his own planes. And you know that I have an opportunity to say to him, can I get a ride in your biplane? And he already has said yes to that. So we're going to get to talking about his pilot and plane past. Pilot, plane, past. All triple P's.
The Connects Nurseries Garden Center on Highway 19 West in Northfield carries a huge inventory of perennials, shrubs, and trees for every landscaping need, including proven winners, color choice, flowering shrubs. Connects Nurseries in Northfield is open 7 days a week from April to November and features proven winners, color choice shrubs, so you can choose from the newest and best flowering shrub varieties. Shop Connects Nurseries in Northfield for the best selection, quality, and value, including proven winners shrubs.
Are you tired of that icky old shower, crumbling old tile, or outdated bathtub? Rebath can help in as little as one day. Rebath is locally owned and would be glad to meet with you for a free estimate. Call us today at 1-800-BATH-TUB to turn that old bathroom into new.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on. What's love got to do with it is a question asked by...
Oh, Aretha, no.
Close, keep going.
Not Aretha Franklin. No. She lives in the south of France. She's been to the Mayo. She's noted for her long legs.
Yes, she
and
sure
was. She was part of a duet with her husband.
And he
wasn't a nice guy. Ike and Tina Turner.
Yeah.
Or as they call him over, Tina Burner.
Yeah. Yeah, she's about my age.
Yeah, she wears well. She's,
oh, boy, yeah.
Yeah.
Me, I get up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, in my head, I'm not that.
That's right.
Yeah. I have to remember I am that. What's Love Got to Do with 1984? It was the number 5 tune. All right, let's get going on the part that you want to talk about, and that is your airplanes and your pilot license. When did you get your license?
Got my license back, oh, God, what was it? I think 1978.
And, at what age?
Let's see, I would have been 24.
Okay. And why did you get a license?
Well, primarily because they had closed up all the drag strips around. So Minnesota Dragways was closed, North Star Dragways, and I used to race dragsters, and I enjoyed the thrill and the noise, the power, you know, typical American, you know. As my wife says, all we like is beer and gasoline.
Was it the rail jobs?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
How about Brainerd?
I would race up at Brainerd, but that's a long two-hour tow in that.
Yep.
And I said, you know, there's got to be something else. And I always enjoyed building models of airplanes, always enjoyed watching airplanes and that. So I sold my race car to a guy in Colorado, took the $7,500, bought a Stearman biplane built by Boeing at Wichita, same plant where they built the B-52s and B-29s. And it was called a PT-17. It was a primary trainer. Very well-engineered airplane because they basically in the start of the war, we were losing the war, World War II. So they did not want to lose any good Army air cadets or Navy cadets to trainers that wouldn't stand the punishment that, of course, a student can give an airplane. So they were over-engineered. In fact, the military had them at 220 horse. round engine, radial engine. Mine has a 450 horse bolted to it. No other major changes done to the airplane. And many crop sprayers and a couple of my friends have bolted even the 600 horse Pratt Whitneys to them to do air show work and whatever. So it's a well-engineered airplane. You can't hurt it. You can point. In fact, I remember at Oshkosh years ago, I was listening to some of the old instructors from World War II, and they said when they were flying back after 8 to 10 hours of training, they would go up for about an hour, come back, and another stop, up, and they would just get so bored, okay, that on the way back, they'd fly together, and then they, at a hand signal, they would dive both airplanes right straight to the ground, okay, and get going about 180, and by then it's shaking, you know, and everything. And then the guy would flip his arm, and they'd both pull back as hard as they could. I mean, just yank the airplane. And the airplane, of course, would pull maybe, you know, 5, 6, maybe possibly 7 Gs. And, of course, they black out. Well, the one that comes through the first, the other guy has to buy the beer for the night. I mean, typical, yeah. You know, wartime, you know, boredom type deal and that. But that's these airplanes were just so well engineered. Well, after World War II, most of them were turned into crop sprayers. Again, they'd hang a 450 horse or maybe a 600 horse Pratt Whitney, take the front cockpit area, put a big fiberglass hopper in there, fill it full of insecticides and all sorts of good stuff for our planet, and they were sprayed. In fact, I had bought a total of 3 over the years. All of them were previous crop sprayers. The first one I bought was down in Danbridge, Tennessee, and went down, looked at it. Didn't even have my pilot's license yet. It was just still a student pilot. So I had an old friend of mine go down and get it.
What were you doing at that age, 24?
I was working at Ford Motor Company as a heavy truck field engineer. So I was a certified auto diesel mechanic, and had built race cars and street rods and rode motorcycles, did all that stuff. So yeah, what the heck, airplanes, just more nuts and bolts. And so the old guy who taught me how to fly, he was wonderful. John Hatz was his name. And we would practice emergency flights all the time to a point where it actually got kind of boring. You know, he would, on takeoff, he would simply pull the engine back to idle. And he'd simply say, "What are you going to do, kid?" And I remember one time I said, "Well, I think we're going to die." He says, "Nope, because I'm going to have my hands around your throat if you don't fix this situation." He wanted to see that I aim for something soft. I never turn back to the runway. You'll stall and fall in. So just land between the houses. Let the houses shear your wings off. Never, never, never land in water. You could be trapped in your airplane 1 inch below the water, and you're going to drown. So don't land in the water. Aim for the pines. Pine trees bend. Don't try not to go in the oaks and maples. They make it a rough landing. Don't land in soybeans, even though you might think because they're lower to the ground. They're very strong, and their vines will wrap around your wheels and flip you over. And not that it'll kill you, but it'll wreck your airplane. Land in the corn. It's like a big sponge. So that's, and he learned how to fly back in the 30s and that, when airplanes were routinely, you know, falling out of the sky. I mean, just things would go wrong. But that's who taught me how to fly, which worked well, because after I restored my first Stearman biplane, I was flying, and over by my hometown of Medford, Wisconsin. And I asked the Chevrolet parts man, and we were at church, and I says, "Al, will you want to go up flying? Let's go look for some deer up in the Shawangunk National Forest." And he went, "God, you know," he was a Korean War vet, "I haven't been in a little airplane for years. Let's go." So went out to the airport, off we go. We're flying, 200-300 feet above the ground, and of course this is out in the national forest and looking for deer. And I'm watching my upper wing, because this is a biplane. You got 2 wings, front cockpit and a rear cockpit, just like Snoopy's airplane. So I'm watching my watch, and I have my total pilot experience is 54 hours from the time I started training, okay? And so I'm looking at my little fuel gauge, which is nothing more than a cork with a clear tube that shows, the float level of how much fuel. Boy, I'm down to a quarter tank. Well, I'd only been flying this airplane for about 3 hours since John Hatz checked me out now in my big Stearman after I restored it. So I said, I better, either this thing's really getting good fuel economy or I think my gauge might be stuck. So I tapped, reached up, tapped Al, and signaled we're heading back home. So we're heading back, and a mile from the Medford airport. And that old, is rumbling along, and I could see the runway and everything was starting to let down. Of course, I'm only flying at about, say, 1,000, 2,000 feet. And old John told me, he says, "Kid, when you're flying this thing, and I know the altitudes you guys with these biplanes fly at, you don't look in the front of your wing where you're going to land when this thing gets quiet. You look right straight down because that's where you're going with this airplane. Most people, when I give rides in that, they always think, wow, two wings, you must glide forever. Oh, no. This has two wings, but you've got all those flying wires and those struts between those wings. When you pull the power off, it's like putting the brakes on. You literally, it'll feel like you're putting the brakes on. There's so much wind resistance. Now, granted, it's fully acrobatic with those two wings. There's tons of lift, but you got to have tons of power. It's not like a Cessna or something like that that's clean, you know, with just one wing and one, you know, two struts. So anyway, it got all of a sudden, bum, 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 bum. Oh, my God. I flipped the mag switch on and off, nothing. I pumped the throttle, bum, 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 bum. Uh-oh. I look up at the gauge, it still says a quarter tank. Well, that don't make any difference because the airplane, I remember holding the stick level, and I was rotating down to about a 45-degree angle heading for a ginseng field. Now, a ginseng field is over in northern Wisconsin. They grow ginseng.
I didn't know that.
Yep, that's old, and they sell a ton of it to Korea. And what they have is all these little wooden posts up and everything, and then with the netting above to create shade. It's a root is what they're and you don't want to land in that. That'd like be dying in a punji pit. So anyway, I dropped the nose down, and of course I could hear, I honest to God, I could hear my instructor, John Hatz, saying, don't look over the leading edge. Look right straight down, kid, because that's where you're going. It's amazing how our brains function. So I dropped the nose, got the speed up. You know, you don't want to get below about, say, you know, 50 mile an hour. I'll stall and just, you know, spin out of the sky. So I dropped the nose, come down. I was about maybe 20 feet above the ginseng field, scooting along now at about 100 miles an hour. I'm heading for a hay field. But I look both ways. Look to my right, look to my left. Here's the telephone wires. Well, those old wires weren't very tall, if you remember in those days. And so I figured, well, if I go above it, I might slow up too much and just flop in, you know, and could get hurt. So I shot underneath. But as I'm getting close, here comes Gene Fuchs with his big milk truck. And I wagged my wings, and he flashed his lights, and I could see he was braking because I knew this growing up in Wisconsin. Milk trucks have no baffles in them. The reason being is if it would start churning the milk too much, it starts to basically starts turning to cheese in a sense. So that's why, in, you know, everything else, every other fluid that's hauled basically has baffles. Well, I could see his truck, the nose dropping. So he's hitting the brakes. I scoot, 100 yards in front of him, pull back on the stick and land in the hayfield. And my friend Al, I'm 24, I suppose he's at the time about, say, 50 years old. And he kind of looked back and pulled up his goggles because you wear a helmet and goggles. And he, how come we stopped here, Davey? We're going to go see Gene Heyer. Oh, okay. That's the farmer we just landed. Okay. And I looked down, and my right hand was just shaking. I grabbed it, stopped it, let go. It was just, you know, nervous. I mean, you know, I just, you know, my God, I just about bit the dust. Bought the farmers, they would say. So I says, Al, can you get out okay? You know? Oh, yeah. I was used to race stock cars, too, so I know how to get out of these harnesses. It's a military harness, you know, and got out. I jumped out, walked around the front of the airplane, pushed up on the fuel strainer. In other words, you know, where the fuel is, and drip, drip. Now, because, of course, I land in a hayfield, it's a little bumpy, you know. I look up, and now my fuel gauge reads empty. So he comes walking around the wing of the airplane and goes, Davey, do you guys always turn your engines off when you land? And I go, Noel, we kind of ran out of gas. Dead silence. You mean we, over the ginseng spikes, under the telephone wires, in front of a milk truck, and I'm still alive? Yeah, Al, let's go see what Gene's doing. He kept going, oh, my God, oh, my God, all the way up, got Gene. Gene came out, hey, I need some gas. Oh, yeah, he drove his pickup out, pumped in about 10 gallons, gave him, you know, 10 bucks, and I'm getting ready to start the airplane. And I says, Al, you want to hop in? We'll go over. He said a few choice, you know, flowered words and says, I'll walk. Of course, Gene says, go hop in, you know, Al, I'll give you a ride back to the airport. And the only damage I had to the airplane was Gene Heyer had started to put up his snow fence. That's in the days when farmers would still put up snow fences, you know, on certain roads and that. So he had some steel stakes. I didn't see him, and my prop, which stopped moving, nicked it. I had a little nick in the edge of my prop. Well, I got it, you know, I sat and took a file and filed it, flew it back to John Hatz's place. We took this huge Hamilton Standard big aluminum propeller off.
Well, how did you get it out of the
The field?
The field, yeah.
Just fill it full and I took a file from the farmer, filed the little, you know, because you want to make the edges round so you don't start a crack.
Well, yeah, those things can really, just a little nick.
Can break a blade, and that's terrible, right? Yeah.
But how did you get out of the field that you landed in?
I took off in it.
So was it a wheat field?
No, just a hay field.
It was a hay field.
Yeah, it was freshly cut hay field.
This is a
tail dragger. Yep. In other words, the tail has a tail wheel. It's not a tricycle one.
Yep.
So it's built to land on these types of runways. So off I went, flew over to John Hatz's place. We took the prop off, and he said, "You better take this right over to Minneapolis. Take it up to an Anoka County Airport." Or Crystal Airport, and have Maxwell Propeller, you know, balance your blades and x-ray it and everything. And that's zygloated, they call it. So I did. So I took it over there, and I had to go see Kenny Maxwell. He's in the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame. His workmanship is fantastic. His son Butch still runs the place up there. So anyway, out comes a couple guys. We all three of us lug in this 500-pound propeller and put it in there, and up walks Kenny. And he looks like a bulldog. In fact, his brother, we always kidded him, he looked like Winston Churchill. Just one of those real happy people. He comes up, and he knew me, and he always called me Fat Cat. I don't know why, but it's just that whatever name he gave you, that's who you were. And Fat Cat, going to tell me what happened to this, or am I going to hear it through the rumor mill? Well, I was up flying, looking for deer, and didn't watch my fuel gauge, only had about 3 hours time on this airplane, and the fuel gauge had a piece of crud stuck in it, and so I wasn't watching my time. You know, you should watch your time, and that's right, kid. So where'd you land? I told him about my whole landing experience, and he says, okay, I want to shake your hand, kid. And I kind of was put back. I stuck my hand, and he just had one of those big old clamping, you know, handshakes, shakes it. He says, I'm proud of you. You did good. Thank you. And I'll tell you why. One, don't ever let this happen again, will you? Nope. Never, never, never. Okay. But here's why I'm proud of you. 97% of the pilots flying nowadays have never had a true dead stick landing. Of the 3% that have, 70% are dead. You did good, kid. Hats teach you how to fly? Yep. He's a good man. You listen to him. And that was Kenny Maxwell. You know, yet he was a tough love, I guess. Boy, if you better tell him, because he'd find out. But that was one incident, and so we got, of course, fixed up the airplane. Then I remember another time.
Same plane?
Yeah, this one, same plane. I took off from the Medford Airport, and all of a sudden my engine started shaking. Okay. And here's a little something. When I was at Oshkosh with the airplane earlier, I was sitting on the tire, and I had my, you know, Army Air Corps, you know, replica jacket. I had my little helmet and goggles and a white scarf sitting there. I just got out of the airplane, sat on the wheel, and up walks this old guy, you know, all those old veterans, you know. Hey, kid, nice airplane. Thank you. You know why you wear a white scarf? My girlfriend wants good luck for me. Ah, that's all bull feathers. I got to be careful what I say. Remember, our governor said the other word, you know, last Friday. He says, no, I'll tell you why. He says, it started with the airmail pilots in the 20s. Their engines, which I knew, had open rocker arms, and they didn't have pressurized oiling to the upper valve train. After they landed, every 5 to 10 hours, they'd have to take a grease gun and, you know, grease the rocker arms and that, so the valve train would work up properly. Well, they always had goggles on. They had to read their maps, and, you know, Charles Lindbergh was an airmail pilot. I mean, that was a risky business. Well, if they got, every so often, they'd get little specks of grease on their goggles. And the guy said, the reason you use white is you can see a clean spot right away while you're flying. And then I said, well, why silk? Simple. Silk absorbs grease and oil fantastic, better than cotton and all this. Oh. So that's where it came from. By World War II, all the oiling systems were self-contained, like our cars nowadays. And, of course, it evolved into the lore of, you know, oh, dear, here, take this white scarf, you know, and the dashing, you know, pilot. But it was part of your physical, you know, need to have that. Well, anyway, I take off from the Medford Airport, my steerman. And I'm by myself, just going to do a quick little spin around. It was just a beautiful night. But all of a sudden, I had one cylinder not working anymore. There's 9 cylinders on this round engine. And it started shaking bad, just like your car when, you know, one spark plug isn't firing. Well, of course, dumb me, I see my windshield now getting all full of oil. So what do? I look on the outside of my windshield with my goggles on. Plump! I'm all full of oil. Oh, my God. Well, I didn't have a white scarf on, needless to say. So I had to slow up the airplane, put my goggles up, and, of course, I could still see enough, but I came in and landed because I just pulled the power back. You don't shut your engine off ever, you know, because you might need that little bit of power to get over a fence in it. So I come in and land. And anyway, taxi up, and sure enough, here's a big hole sticking in the cylinder, and I had to fix that up. So that then basically a forced landing for that. Then another time I had my little Aranca airplane. I had bought now a little Aranca airplane that has a little 90 horse, looks like a Piper Cub.
And before you continue your story, I'm going to take a break.
Okay.
And I have to remind people that 15 with the Author will be on at 11 o'clock this morning following the Wayne Eddy Affair. We'll be back with Dave Bates on the Wayne Eddy Affair. It seems like he's been called Kid most of his adult life.
Syngenta Seeds Incorporated in Stanton is proud to salute all the Randolph FFA members attending the state FFA convention. Innovation has led Syngenta Seeds to be part of the world's largest supplier of agricultural products. Syngenta Seeds, a global business dedicated solely to agribusiness, located in Stanton. Syngenta Seeds supports the work of the FFA. For all your seed needs and crop protection, contact your Syngenta dealer.
Hey, it's your stomach again. Subway has all new signature wraps, and around the water cooler, the other stomachs can't stop talking about them. Chipotle Southwest Steak and Cheese, Turkey Bacon and Guac, Rotisserie Style Chicken Caesar Signature Wraps. Listen, if I'm honest, as a talking stomach, I don't have a lot of life experience. But I do know one thing. These signature wraps are jam-packed with meat. So what are you waiting for? I'm growling over here. Subway. Make it what you want.
Getting new furniture sounds fun. Shopping for furniture, not so much. High-pressure sales leave you wanting to get out of the store as quick as possible, which can mean bringing home furniture that's not right for you, or nothing at all. Not at America's Mattress and Furniture To Go in Dundas. Our low-pressure salespeople are there to help, but allow you to browse for as long as you need to find the right furniture or mattress for you. Stop into America's Mattress and Furniture To Go in Dundas and see how relaxing furniture shopping can be.
Going back to 1984 on the Wayne Eddy Affair, the time here this morning on Kim, a friend you can count, is 10:39:40. Hello. Your turn. Name that tune.
Oh, I believe Boy George?
Well, he had a band at the time before he went to.
Oh, okay. Then I guess I don't remember his band's name, though. It's just known as Boy George.
Culture Club.
Culture Club. There you go.
You know the name of it?
Chameleon?
Yes. You're good.
Oh, Lucky. Lucky.
All right, let's continue our stories. My guest this morning is Dave Bates. He's been my guest on more than one occasion. And very good. Do you give speeches, by the way? Do you tell stories? Are you invited to go to like Lions Club, Rotary Club, Exchange Club, Kiwanis Club?
I never have, I guess. In all fairness, and again, before we all of a sudden end not enough time, I want to thank you for the opportunity to tell some stories because I cherish our memories. And again, my wife being a neurologist, who some of her specialties are Alzheimer's and Parkinson and that, it is a sad situation when we lose our memories. I mean, that is the essence of who we are. And so, but to have the opportunity here and just share the stories and that, we're all storytellers.
And you have children?
Yes.
Three?
Three of them, yep.
Barbara? No,
that's my brother and sister. I got John, David, and Annie.
Whoops. And how old is John?
Let's see. Well, the oldest is David. He's 30. Oh,
okay.
John's 27, and Annie will be 24.
So 27, 30.
30, yep.
And 24. What's her name?
Annie.
Annie.
Yep.
How many times have people said to her, get your gun?
Oh, many times.
Yeah.
Many times. And and all those kids.
Did they grow up in the home?
Oh, God, yes. I'll tell you. Here's a quick story.
Oh, take all your time.
No, this is a quick story. I had my wife in the front cockpit of this little Ronca. So this is an enclosed, high-wing, fabric-covered airplane, little four-cylinder Continental engine putting along, you know. We were right over Northfield here. And it was during the balloon rally that they always used to have over at Faribault. So we were watching the balloons, and she had my son David at the time. He was maybe 2 and a half or so, sitting on her lap up in the front cockpit there. And we're just putting along, you know, and all of a sudden, the engine quits. And, you know, of course, like I say, flying is hours and hours of sheer boredom with a few seconds of terror thrown in. So I push my wife to the side because the instrument panel is actually in front of her in this old 1940 airplane, and I can still see my son's hand on the fuel switch.
Oh, my goodness.
David turned the fuel off. Well, needless to say, after a few choice words, his hand came down quite abruptly. I was lucky enough to turn the fuel back on, drop the nose of the airplane. Now, this airplane doesn't have any battery or any starter, so you have to hand prop it, or if it quits on you in the air, you have to drop the nose and get the wind to spin it, which luckily it was still spinning. So off we went again. So David went on to become a heck of a good pilot and all that, and of course we tease him every so often how he just about did me in. But that was right over Northfield here. Just again, it's just...
Well, we like to have people drop in.
Yeah, that's
have you ever flown over Northfield during defeated Jesse James?
You know, I never have. I honestly just usually that's a Labor Day weekend or the weekend after,
yeah.
And there's a bunch of different breakfast fly-ins and stuff. And of course, and that's really what I do a lot with my old steerman is I donate rides to like South Central College, Bethlehem Academy, St. Mary's Shattuck.
People auction.
Have their silent auctions.
Do you ever get embarrassed on one that would go at a low price?
Oh, actually, well, I guess, example. Last year, ours was the highest bid. It's usually amazingly, I don't know why they'd want to pay to fly in an open cockpit, old, noisy, round military airplane, but we've taken Zach Parisi up. Because, of course, he went to St. Mary's Shattuck. My son took him up for a ride. And one other time we took a fellow, Mr. Dean. And he paid for, up at Shattuck, the complete athletic dome and everything there. And he, in fact, that year he outbid Zach Parisi. He told Zach to put your money away. I'm going flying. He shows up at the airport. He's, at the time, about 89 years old a few years ago. He was a World War II fighter pilot.
Flew
P-47s. And he owns a big meat company down in Iowa, very wealthy man. Of course, that's why he paid for all that hockey arena and everything up at St. Mary's Shattuck's. But anyway, he gets out of his car and he walks like basically a 90-year-old man, okay? But he sees this big old steerman and he kind of straightens up. And I'll feed you a little bit of information. My wife, being a neurologist, she says, the only true fountain of youth drug that we know of is adrenaline. Excitement. And he saw this. He says, oh, my God. He says, I haven't been in a little airplane in 40 years. You know, Davey, I learned how to fly in Randolph Field in Texas in 1943 in a steerman. I got my primary training in that. Let's go flying. I says, well, okay. Let me get a chair to help you get up.
Yeah, it's work to get in there.
It's a big step. It's a big airplane.
Yeah.
I go in the hangar because I had the airplane parked on the ramp, go in the hangar, get a chair, you know, which is what I use for people to give rides. I look back, he's already in the cockpit.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy. And then he goes, come on, I'm on my honeymoon.
Did he take the right, the left, the front or the back?
You'd take the front because the pilot in command is in the back on those.
Well, I'm wondering if he went in the back.
No, right. He went in the front.
Yep.
And he was already buckled in. And his first wife had passed away a few years ago. He just married the director of nursing at Iowa State University. She was 62. She just retired. So he said, I married a young chicken, you know.
Wow.
And my young chicken, and she's standing there, you know. Is he going to be okay? I says, I think he's fine. And I let my son take him up for a ride. And I says, do you want to do anything? He says, well, let's just see how I go. So we watch him take off, and they head out towards where they practice acrobatics, you know. And sure enough, all of a sudden, here's a loop, and there's a spin, and oh, my God, you know. And she says, is he going to be okay? I says, yeah. And I mentioned, you know, I says, I told her about adrenaline. Let's just see how he comes back. And she says, well, this should be exciting. So they come back in, taxi in. He gets out of the cockpit. I'll get you a stool. I don't want your ankles getting busted up. Oh, no, I know. He knew right where to swing his leg and grabbed hold of the rear cockpit and jumped down. And he was standing up straight, talking as fast as me. He says, yeah. He says, I even went after a combine. What? You're not supposed to do that stuff. Well, it was just like when I went after a train down by Stuttgart. And I took that SOB out, you know, with those Nazis and that. And his wife is, her eyes are bugged open, you know, and she's sitting there looking at him. And he's got his arms flailing around. You swear he's 21 years old again. And my wife always told me, it'll last usually after your experience about 15 to 20 minutes. So he talked for like 5-10 minutes. Then he said, let me go get the car started up, you know. By the time he was coming back, he had the stoop again, and he was kind of talking a little bit more like this. And she said, well, let's go. And so he turned around, walked back to the car. And his new wife grabbed me by the arm. She had tears running down her eyes. She says, thank you, Davey. I'm so glad we had this opportunity. I was kind of scared for him that maybe he's a little too old for this stuff. Oh, he loved it. But more than anything else, I can't imagine what he and those pilots were like when they were in their early 20s. I got a glimpse of the past. Thank you so much. And she literally just had tears running down her eyes, and then off they went. So those are the type of deals, you know, when we give, you know, rides and all that, those are the ones that you always remember. And because of the experiences, I can't imagine those pilots flying those, shooting 50 caliber bullets ripping through their airplanes, and they'd land, lose a couple friends, next day do it again. Oh, my God. I don't know if I could do that, but all I know is they
were using biplanes in the Second World War?
No. He had only learned how to fly, yes. Okay. They were used in the Second World War to train the fighter pilots how to do acrobatics,
okay.
Yes.
All right.
Then they'd go into, like, the AT-6, yeah. And then finally into a fighter, yes.
I got the pleasure of doing, I want to say PT-9, but that's, I think, Kennedy's boat.
Yeah.
But then it was a trainer during the Second World War.
Did it have just one wing?
It had one wing.
That's a PT-19.
Yeah, and they were on the bottom.
Yes, it's a Fairchild PT-19. Yeah. There's one at Faribault in the hangar.
Oh, and one of the things, the trainer would tell me, would do something, and then I would do it.
Right.
And what I liked most was picking up the speed. On this one, we need to get to 180. That's 180 miles an hour.
Right.
And so you're heading towards the ground.
Yep.
There it is. Come on. 160, 180. Okay, yep. Go.
Yeah, over you go. Do a loop or a roll or whatever.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I'm looking forward to your ride.
Oh, it'll be fun. It's a fun. I always tell people that it's like going to Valley Fair, but on steroids.
Yeah, and for real.
Yes.
We're going to take a final break, and then we'll continue our conversation, all right?
Okay.
David Bates is my guest here on KIM, and he is a pilot. He retired from Northwest Orient Airlines and drove and built a dragster.
Yeah.
Well, how many horses did your dragster have?
About 600 back then. That's
wow.
Almost, good Lord, 40 years ago. But that was a lot back then.
How much was a tire?
Oh, tires at that time were about $100 a piece, which was about a week's salary. So it was expensive then, too.
Yep.
If you need to send a box far away or something overnight, want a cool sign for your business or a banner for your birthday, and you don't know how to do it, we'll help you through it at the Graphic Mailbox. You can make copies, get supplies, find a box, ship a box, buy stamps, fax a letter, get your mail, send your mail, make a sign, design a sign, fix a sticker, print a poster, FedEx, DHL, UPS, Speedy, or even through the U.S. mail. If you don't know how to do it, we'll help you through it at the Graphic Mailbox.
We're Three Links, and we are here for you. I am Sarah Dandel, manager at Three Links Apartments in Northfield. We offer an active, vibrant community for seniors and the disabled. We have spacious one-bedroom apartments, controlled access, off-street parking, elevator, and are handicap accessible. This is a place to call home, make new friends, and participate in many fun activities. Tours are welcome. Call 664-8850.
Your wait is over. Finally, a refreshingly affordable golf membership. As one of the finest golf facilities in the greater Twin Cities area, Northfield Golf Club membership is built upon quality with a price point that is unmatched for a private club, a true value. The course offers a variety of membership options including individual, couples, senior, young adult, and others. You're invited to compare versus private and even public golf courses. 2018 memberships now available. Call our friend General Manager Dan Doles at 507-645-4026.
Millstream Commons Assisted Living, conveniently located in downtown Northfield, has got a big case of spring fever. Our tenants embrace life to the fullest, and one way of doing that is cheering on the Minnesota Twins. Sure, we've got beautiful apartments, great food, and all the supportive services needed, but another thing we get really excited about is baseball. To catch up on the latest Twins news and get a tour, call me, Kathy Olson, at 507-650-0141.
He just died last year, I think, or something like that. The fella did. He's from England. Not Boy George. George Michaels.
Name that tune. Wham! With Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
That's right.
Yep. Oh, my goodness, it's 7 minutes before 11 o'clock, and my guest here this morning, David Bates, is a great storyteller. I'm really enjoying that. Now, how many planes have you owned in your lifetime?
Well, I've owned three Stearmans. In fact, I restored a stock Stearman, just the way the military had it in World War II, and that ended up going to John Paul Jones, the bass guitarist for Led Zeppelin over in England.
Oh.
And his father was a RAF mechanic. So it was over there. Then I had my little Ronca, which I wanted an airplane that I could fly when I become very old or I can't afford gasoline, because that one only burns about 4 gallons an hour instead of the Stearman, which burns about 20 to 25 gallons an hour. And so I have that. So basically just two airplanes now, a couple old cars and Model A's.
Why do they use so much fuel?
Well, the large engines. Basically, my engine is 985 cubic inch. So in a sense, that's even bigger than two 427, say, Chevys, you know, the great Corvette engine. And that's the smallest Pratt & Whitney. The next one up is the 600-horse model. That's 1,340 cubic inch. And then they go, like the Corsair, the one that I owned for 1 week, and then my buddy finally says, you can't afford it, kid. That has a R 2800, 2,800 cubic inch, 18 cylinder, plus it's air-cooled. Air-cooled engines are inefficient. Okay, that's why, water-cooled engines evolved, you know, because it keeps constant dimensions on your engine because the water temperature is constant. And anyway, those can burn 80 to 120 gallons an hour. And then you go into the largest, like in the B-36 or the B-50 bombers, they were the R-4360, largest round engine ever produced in mass production, had, I believe, 28 cylinders in you know, basically seven-cylinder engines, four of them bolted together. It would burn anywhere from 350 to, on takeoff, 500 gallons each engine, and they may have six or four engines on these airplanes. But that then, in the early 50s, basically they transitioned into the jet engines. And the rest is history. So you rarely see that engine around. Once there's a couple old airplane freighters that have them yet, and there's I think there's still one Corsair that they bolted this huge engine to. Normally a Corsair had R2800, but in World War II, towards the end there, over by Japan, we were just getting hammered by the kamikazes. The airplanes we had over there were great fighters once they were in the air, but they couldn't get up quick enough to stop that kamikaze airplane from diving in. The world's first drones, in a sense, you know, guided drones, guided missiles. Well, they bolt this twice, you know, almost size engine, and now they could go after them. But amazingly, they dropped the atomic bomb. They only had built 10 of these hot rod Corsairs, and by then the war quit and they canceled the contracts. And those Corsairs basically ended up air racing at Reno. And that they're at Cleveland and Reno and that in years to come and that. But, it burns a lot of fuel. It's like a Harley in the sky. It's open cockpit. It's the airplane, I painted it black and orange and, you know, made it look like a pre-war Stearman rather than paint it up with the military stars and bars and everything. And I can fly that for, say, you know, go up for 20 minutes and I get my fix. I'm good for a couple weeks. I have a couple CDs, yes, called Round Sounds and the Roar of the Pratt & Whitney's I'll put in on like a day like today when I'm not quite ready to take it out yet. It's still a little too cold, but I'll turn that up, be on County Road 21 or something out there and roll the windows down, have the wind blowing in my face. And as my wife says, you know, you're going to wreck your hearing. It's always, what? What'd you say? So, you know how well that goes.
Do you ever buzz? I know it's totally illegal,
right,
and all that, but, okay, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I heard a plane for a long, long time, and it was pretty high,
mm-hmm,
but it had an after noise, kind of like, it was just a heavy metal, if
mm-hmm,
you will.
Mm-hmm.
That,
yeah, what you hear, two things. One, my son called me yesterday, and he says, oh my God, Dad, they brought your Corsair down from Wahpeton. My Corsair, along with Sierra Sioux, a P-51 Mustang, were flying over by Prior Lake. That's not far from here, so you might have heard them. It was about 3, 4 in the afternoon yesterday, so a couple of the people were zooming around, yeah, on a nice day.
Yeah.
But what you hear, kind of interesting, with propeller airplanes, if they have a controllable prop, when they take off, it's in low pitch, and what you hear, that rah, that's not the engine. That's the tips of the propeller breaking the speed of sound over 700 miles an hour, the speed of the, and your ears are picking up those little sonic booms. Because once they take off, you'll hear them, and then they go, they pull back in high pitch or high gear, like a hydrostatic, you know, and they slow up the propeller to take bigger bites of the air. That's why the British call them. In fact, they don't call them propellers. They're called air screws, because that's what it does. It is threading itself through the air. That's what a propeller does.
Well, we have about a minute and a half here before we get to our KYMN special report with Terry Knight. And, of course, that's 15 with the author, featured at 11 o'clock every Monday. And I have to say a big thank you to David Bates, and thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
And I'm looking forward to a ride.
We'll do that when it gets warm out.
Yeah. And I love flying,
mm-hmm,
not commercial, not at all, but mm-hmm, biplanes,
right,
like you have,
yep,
there, and the Corsair type.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty exciting, and I always think, well, you know, if you're going to crash and die, I mean, it's better than laying in a hospital for 2 weeks.
Well,
you know?
we don't think. And you know, in all fairness, every nut and bolt on these, yeah, airplanes have been restored. They're in better shape than they were back in the old days.
I was saying that for people that would be afraid of it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But I know there's another show in you, and we'll get together and talk about it. All right.
Yep. After you go for a ride,
okay,
we'll come back and then we'll have a debriefing of your flight.
All right,
from Bates biplanes.
All right, thank you, David Bates, on KYMN Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 AM for almost 50 years, and now 95.1 FM, The One, Northfield.
It's time for 15 with the Author, hosted by Terry Knight. Join Terry as she opens the cover on a different book each week and talks with the author about their book, their life, and their message. Take a deeper look under the cover with Terry.
It's 1939 Germany. After her mother is shot at a checkpoint, 15-year-old Sarah meets a mysterious man with an ambiguous accent, a suspiciously bare apartment, and a lockbox full of weapons. My guest today on 15 with the Author is Matt Colleen with his young adult debut novel, Orphan, Monster, Spy. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Hello, how are you doing?
I am well, thank you. How are you?
I'm pretty good, I'm pretty good.
Well, that's good. Now, did I say your last name correctly?
Colleen, yes.
Colleen, okay.
Irish.
Well, and we just celebrated St. Patrick's Day here. Okay, so anyway, you have had a few careers, according to a bio, including writing stints. What were those, and what drew you to young adult novel writing, in particular, the subject matter?
Oh, goodness. I was never quite sure what I was going to do. I mean, I've been, even before I started writing, I was a singer, then a designer, and an advertising creative, and I ran a laser tag center and an internet cafe and a nightclub, and all this time I'd been writing, but I was kind of taking it for granted. It seemed like an ancillary part of sort of a wider creative job, and it was only when my business partner quit. In the UK, you have to work as a pair as advertising creatives, and I found a new partner who was just a better designer than me. He had a real gift, and he was also Swedish, so I said, well, I guess I'll do the writing then. And then that was like the scales kind of fell from my eyes. When that was all I had to think about, I found that it came really easily to me, and it made sense because I'd been writing all this time. I'd been writing lyrics, I'd been writing film scripts, I'd been writing sort of all the way along. And then I had sort of stints as a sort of, ignored sports and music journalist. And then I spent the last 8 years working for the Lego company in the UK. And that was,
fun.
There were three things I wanted to be when I was five. I wanted to be an astronaut, an X-Wing pilot, and I wanted to work for Lego. So one of those came true.